Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, what is happening, San Diego? Welcome to it. Middle of the week, Gwen and Chris get together. 97.3 The Fan. Chris Ello popping up on the screen. Took me a moment there. I was running a second or two behind. Tony Gwynn Jr. is there at Petco Park. And Mr. Scraby. Before we go anywhere, Tony, last night, brilliant in your presentation on television. Watching the game with my wife. She could not stop talking about how you were dressed to the tens last night on the telecast.
Thank you, sir.
Spectacular.
Touchdown! Thank you, Miss Lori.
Yeah, Miss Lori. I told her, I said, what are you talking about? I didn't even notice what you were wearing. So
don't take my shirt off.
That's what Tony told every woman on the way out.
You looked good, Tony. You looked good. Here's the deal. We got to get to it quick because we have a much shorter show today. Game is an hour earlier this evening. So Sam Levitt's pregame show at 4:40. I know Tony's got to get ready for his telecast with Don Orsillo. So we'll get to it here. But we got the regular Wednesday stuff coming up, and Chris versus the fans and Big Five and all that. Here's the deal. Last night, the scoreboard said the Padres lost. The standings said that the Padres lost. The reaction of everybody filing slowly out of, Petco Park last night said they lost. But ultimately, they won. And I don't really look at that game last night any differently than that. Michael King went out, gave him five really clean innings. Of course, he made a couple of mistakes. What do you expect after 4.5 months?
Yeah.
But as long as he shows up to the ballpark today feeling well, and I suspect that he will, that was a thumbs-up evening, I must tell you, for the Padres. It hurt to lose the game. I don't want to lose the game either, but the bigger picture, that was, I thought, was big last night, Tony, and I thought he looked really good. Maybe you had a little better look at it because I was at the game. I wasn't breaking down the, the tape like I usually do. But
yeah,
you
no,
think?
he was good, man. I think he had far less rust than I thought he was going to have.
Yeah,
and the one homer, the first homer was the one. Really, the two homers that he gave up were, misplaced sinkers. They ended up a little bit over the plate. I think one was a misplaced sinker, one was a sweeper that didn't sweep. And that's what happens when you haven't thrown. I mean, he's got the same amount of starts and probably, more diced up time than Darvish has had, right? Darvish didn't pitch, and then he just pitched, and he's pitched since. You had Michael start the year, go to the IL, come back, one start, go back to the IL. And I thought he was pretty sharp, man, for missing all that time. Obviously, the Padres end up on the losing side of things, and they lose a game from the Dodgers in the division. They fall a spot back from the Cubs, who won last night.
Yeah.
But I think that, as I said yesterday, if he gave you four, you would have felt pretty good about. And it was healthy, right?
Right.
You felt pretty good about it.
Yeah. When he came in the fifth inning and I looked in the bullpen, there wasn't really anybody throwing yet.
Not only
is he going four, but he feels good to go five because they weren't even protecting him right away.
Oh, by the way, he threw 63 pitches.
Yeah,
he
it was
probably
pretty clean.
Could have gone longer.
Yeah, it was pretty clean. It was
clean. So, yeah. I mean, you got to – yes, it sucks to lose that game, obviously, especially the way they did it. They got back in it. Looked very similar to the night before, right?
Yeah.
They had nothing going.
Right.
And then, boom, they put up the two runs. I think the other thing that people should, pull from yesterday, Jackson Merrill looks like he's starting to heat up again.
Ooh,
and especially considering, for most of the season, while he was healthy, he was hitting in the four spot, right? And if he's going to swing the bat the way he has the last three games, it'd be nice to be able to slide him up in that four spot with Manny kind of struggling the way that he is right now. It would just be a little more support there. And so those are the two things that I kind of pulled from last night, despite the kind of terrible way it ended.
Yeah, it was, you know, they're two, right. You get to a game in the sixth inning, and we've said it 100 times. Your bullpen's in the game. Their bullpen's in the game. Their bullpen is among the worst in the league, and statistically has been, I believe, the worst in the league for the last couple of months. So
we didn't give them enough time to do what they did, do what they do. Really,
what
right?
Do you mean? We were swinging too many pitches, and
no,
earlier.
I just mean like we needed to get through that ninth inning there, right?
Yeah.
Like you get through that ninth of the zero. Now the pressure starts to mount a little bit, right?
Yeah.
You get into some of their not so high leverage guys. And now you get to start to pick away as the Padres did the night before. But, you know, Suarez ended up falling behind, and you know, you fall behind at the big level, no matter how hard you throw, guys can start kind of anticipating.
It's a reminder. It's a reminder, guys. I mean, I said it to somebody. I mean, you're Michael King, or you know, you could be anyone else who's throwing, you know, Mason Miller, we've even seen. We saw it against Gurriel. You put the ball in the wrong place, these big league hitters can still hit it. It is quite remarkable, and that was a mistake. I mean, you walk with two outs and, you know, give up the home run. It was disappointing for sure. I also want to give myself some of the blame. Fair up. I want to square up and take my share of the blame here. I was going to say many of the listeners probably blamed me for the loss anyway.
Oh no,
so.
I was feeling the heat about an Ellie De La Cruz home run last night. So
oh, that's right. You called. You said he hadn't hit one in months.
Since like July 28th or something.
Yeah, but this honestly happened. Yeah, in the ninth inning. We were at the game last night, my wife and I, and we had some friends of ours, Scott and Elizabeth, good friends, came to the game. We did get to sit up in the Odyssey Suite.
Whoa.
Yes, I know. About once a year, they regale us with that opportunity.
Regale us.
Right. So we were sitting in the big leagues up there and having a good time. Michael Valenzuela, our market manager, was up there hosting. And so it was a nice night. And we're sitting there, and my wife and her friend Elizabeth, they talked to each other like they hadn't seen each other in 10 years. I don't think they stopped talking to each other the whole game, and I don't think they even know yet that the game is over. Like, they just were paying no attention to anything that was happening. It was hilarious. Scott and I were having a good time talking baseball and all this other stuff. But they got to the, you know, top of the ninth inning there, two outs, and the guy walked. And for some reason, I turned to my wife during a quiet moment in her conversation and said, I hope you guys are ready to settle in. Could be getting some extra innings tonight. And I swear to you, the next pitch sailed over the wall.
Holy shnikes!
This is trouble.
Unbelievable. Like the next pitch. So I'm taking the blame for, you know,
you should.
For jinxing it, I guess.
You should. I'm not even going to...
It's all your fault.
Yeah.
So I'm not even going to cover up my disdain for you right now.
As a matter of fact, if you look at the ESPN standings right now, it still has the Padres record at 79-65 with one loss charged to me.
Charged to CE.
CE. I'm in the CE column.
Can I tell you guys what bothers me about baseball sometimes? Baseball in general. But I'm speaking obviously from the Padres perspective. When everybody tells you that Zach Littell gives up doubles, gives up homers, he gives up everything basically, and then the Padres can't get any sort of extra base hits off of him. Why does this seem to happen to the Padres? I know it happens everywhere, but
that's what I was going to.
It drives me insane when we spend the entire show bringing up the stats about how bad Zach Littell has been this year, and the Padres can't even get on base. That drives me insane.
We never said he was bad, actually. We said he gives up home runs, which he did not do, but we said he's a really good pitcher, and he showed that last night, and he stayed away from the home run, and that's why he was successful.
I promise you, I said the same thing last night as we were going through our elements on the man. We're putting these 30 however many homers up, man. It just feels like it's setting us up for failure.
It's dangerous, yeah. It's dangerous.
We're gonna show this. We're gonna show the screen and the balls that he's throwing that are getting hit out of the ballpark.
Yeah,
yeah.
Can somebody else also
umbrella
line of thinking here? Again, my friend Scott, he's a good
Padre
fan. Scott getting some love on the show. He deserves it. He's a good guy. But he said this at least six different times last night to me, straight up. I can't stand it. Every time we're at Petco Park, all of our fly balls get caught on the warning track, and all of theirs go over the fence.
I've said this before, too.
I know you have. And I know everybody says that, and we did have maybe two, three caught on the warning track. By the way, we're kind of remiss if we don't, you know, celebrate that catch that Fernando
made. Oh, I'm
going
to play the highlight to come back next segment.
It was, you know, one of the great ones. And the other guy made a good catch, too, but not as good as Fernando's. But, you know, so Scott said this, and I thought, yeah, I've heard this before. So is there any way to analytically check this? Can you look somewhere and see how many fly ball outs we get?
Oh, fly ball outs.
Like, how many shots do we hit to the warning track at Petco as opposed to other teams?
Well, I can tell you because
I wonder if this is really true. Do we hit more long fly outs than the other team?
Well,
it seems like it, but I don't know.
I will say this. Kevin Acey wrote in his newsletter today all about this, and he said opposing teams had 77 home runs at Petco Park this season compared to Padres 59. Okay. They have also been out-homered 80-68 on the road. I know this team isn't built around the home run, right, but it does sometimes feel, for lack of a better way of explaining it, that the Padres have warning track power and the other teams have home run power.
That's why I would like to see it be proven. I mean, I'm sure in the analytics of this world, we can find out if that's really true.
Okay, let's assume that's true.
Okay.
Then what?
Yeah, right.
Well, that's what Manny said next. Here's what Manny said to Kevin Acey. Quote, I don't have an answer for you. Go find someone who could give you those answers and then come tell me.
Right.
I want to know.
Like, okay, fine. We've been at homered. We hit more, you know, warning track. Okay, so now what? What's the fix? We try to hit more? Like, try to
bring
hit
the
further?
Fences in. So the Padres can get some.
I was going to say, then... Bring them back when the other team's up?
No. Just know that the other team's going to get their home runs, but the Padres are also going to get some home runs.
I think the statistic that you just pointed out, though, is a bit telling. If you said that they've been out-homered by 18 at home, and they've been out-homered by 12 on the road, then maybe the ballpark doesn't really have that much to do with it.
It's
maybe
the way the team's built.
Yeah, the other teams just hit more home runs.
I think
just be it. I don't know.
You start shuffling up and down the lineup, right? Jackson's not at where he was last year, you know, and that might have been like a ceiling year in terms of homers for him, right? Manny's a little bit under right now, but he's still got some time to go. He very well may hit seven home runs before this thing is all over with. Who knows? But if it goes the way it's been going, he's going to finish under what he normally has homer-wise. Toddy's, we've already discussed this at nauseam about, you know, his homer. Although – he's at 20 now. I don't know that it's, you know, he's far off outside of the 40 year, right? I mean, he's usually around 25, 26. But, I mean, two homers there, three homers here, another four homers here. All of a sudden, you're, like, right back into the realm of being even at home, even on the road. And are we having the same discussion? And no. So, I mean, it is what it is at this point. It's September. It's no longer like, oh, well, quarter of the season, halfway. We are in September. And so, you know, at the end of the day, not to mention, Jerickson Profar's 24 from last year also made this look a little bit
different. But Sheetsy is making up for it.
Wow.
He is. He's got a career year in that. I think Laureano has got a career year, although all his, I think, what, 10 since he's been here?
It sounds 10 homers? Right. I don't know. But
I think he's got about
right.
10 here. He's been
9
great.
Or 10
yeah, he's been
since
great.
He's been here. So, I mean, listen, I think this is part of what the roster looks like this year. These very same guys could add two or three or five more homers next year, and you're looking at a completely different deal.
Yeah. But however you slice it up this year, we're not as good at home runs as the other team.
It's because
it seemed to stand out last night because they hit three and won the game, and the Padres hit zero and lost the game. So I get the frustration.
If they had a better power hitter at number two, they'd be fine. I'm just kidding.
They did last night.
I'm kidding.
So stop with
I'm
that.
I'm kidding.
By the way, why not? Why not?
I knew that was going to
No, you're an idiot. You're an idiot for bringing it up. But since you did, let me twist the knife a little more. The last three games, they've neglected to put Arraez in the lineup batting second. They've lost them all.
All right, so maybe it's not his fault.
I'm just saying. You can look it up. All right, Gwen and Chris, we are underway. The slings and arrows will be heading. We'll be ducking and come back and get you rolling with some more on 97.3 The Fan.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Swings at the first pitch, sends it in the air to deep right center. Fernando is back. He's at the wall. He leaps up. He reaches over, and he made the catch. Oh, unbelievable. Throwback to first. O'Hearn had to come off the bag and could not tag Lux for the double play. But hang a star for Fernando Tatis Jr., who just robbed another homer.
That, my friends, is what a good call sounds like on a unbelievable play. That was my other partner, my real partner, Jesse Agler, on the call.
Should we
there
listen to the TV color guys?
No, we
call?
Should. We should not. We should not. It wasn't terrible, but it wasn't that. I can tell you that.
Jesse hit a home run. Let's put it this way: Fernando did not rob Jesse of a home run on that call.
I will say, from it, at least from my perspective, the angle over there made it. I didn't know that ball was hit that well. I think the angle from where I'm at here, which is like right behind home plate, I would have seen it better. But, yeah, no, another like stupid play. Like that's the best play. That's his best play of the year.
That's either. On the end of the year top 10 in MLB.
For sure.
He's got to work on the arm, though. You got to get the double play and finish that. No, I'm kidding.
He knew as soon as he let it go.
I'm joking. It would have been an astonishing play if he got the double play on top of it.
He knew as soon as he let it go that he messed that up. Like, he immediately put his hands on his head after
he was
it came
like,
out of his head.
I had that, but man, that was unbelievable. And let's be honest, if they win the game last night, then he gets 100% almost of the credit. Because
for
if
sure.
they go behind 4-0, you know at that point it's probably not going to turn out. But right. He saved the game for quite a while. That was an unbelievable catch. It was fun to just watch it and see it and appreciate it. And Will Benson almost kind of did a Gavin Sheets just on the other side of the field. But he caught the ball and it ricocheted his head up against there. It was kind of scary for a few minutes.
I didn't even know that there was padding up there until I saw his head hit it, right? Because I honestly didn't. I just kind of chalked it up. But, yeah, man, he almost decapitated himself as he caught that ball. And then
good catch.
Stayed in the game, man. Good for him. He, I don't know if it's good for him, actually. But I appreciate the mindset there. He had already homered. He had robbed a homer. Once he cleared the concussion protocol, he was like, there ain't no way I'm coming out of this game. This could be a career night for me. Didn't turn out that way, but nonetheless, I appreciated the toughness, I guess, of coming
he
back.
He was seeing four balls when he was hitting instead of just one.
Yeah, I'm not sure it was necessarily good for him at the plate. Yes,
by
indeed.
The way, do you know what you do? Do you
hit the middle one?
No.
Okay.
Do you know what you do to an elephant with three balls?
No, Chris.
You walk him and pitch to the giraffe.
Okay.
You never heard that before?
I've never heard that.
Really?
I hadn't heard that one either.
No, I thought we were doing the Lonzo balls.
I'm not going to lie. I didn't know where we were going when you said elephant with three balls. I didn't know.
Yeah,
that was
Tom
good.
Brady was on cold as balls yesterday. So,
I'm surprised you guys have never heard that one. That's kind of been a long-standing one.
Let's get to today's lineup. A little different for you lineup freaks out there. Toddy back in the leadoff spot. No surprise there. Luis Arraez back in the two spot. No surprise there. Manny Machado, Gavin Sheets, Ramon Laureano, Jackson Merrill, Ryan O'Hearn, Jake Cronenworth, Elias Diaz gets the start behind the dish tonight.
Yeah, well, with Pivetta, right? He's all the Pivetta guy, but
yep.
You know, I don't want to drag a rise thing into this anymore. So we're done.
But
with
you're
the
about to, huh?
Well, I'm just going to throw it out. They are 0-3 in the three that he didn't start. So there's that. But here's what I thought last night. I don't know that I'd feel 100% comfortable sending him up as a pinch hitter right now. He doesn't look great up there when he pinch hits. Now, maybe he just was a bad swing last night, but that didn't even look like him in that a bit. He went down quick.
One on two off the bench is a little, you know.
Okay, yeah, right.
And he doesn't do it off.
Right.
You know, that's not something that he's used
to.
That's
all I'm saying. I mean, we're going to fight back and forth with the listeners forever on whether he should play. That's fine. But I'm just talking about him as a pinch hitter.
It didn't really
look great, honestly. So, and the other thing is, I think it's time that Bryce Johnson gets some bigger chances to pinch hit. I just look it up. He's got a hit almost every time he's come up recently.
I know it's not the sexiest name, but the proof is in the statistics that everybody likes to throw us.
Yeah,
you know what
I'm
saying?
Give him some more chances there, I say, until he proves differently.
Did I get everybody? Yes, Nick Pivetta on the mound. Andrew Abbott on the mound for the Reds. You guys listening to the practice rendition of... the
practice anthem?
Of the Star-Spangled Banner. But Andrew Abbott has been a bit of a conundrum for the Padres, at least. Now, he's had like a Jekyll and Hyde kind of last couple of months. He has been dominant, but the month of August, I think he's like 0-5. He struggled immensely. I don't know that the Padres have seen that version of him, though.
We only see the good version. Yeah.
The good version.
Yeah. I don't know if it's worth putting into the Daily Gambit early. But how much are we betting on T.J. Friedl to lead off the game with a homer? And if not him, Noelvé Marte, the next guy to hit a homer. We finally got the first guy out last night, and then before I could celebrate that, it was 1-0 again. This is just crazy, you know, timing. But every game, we give up a home run to the first couple of hitters.
Okay, so it's not just me.
Oh, of course. I think that's kind of been it.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
Yeah. Yeah, we're all noticing that. So
I feel crazy in my thoughts sometimes, but
it feels like it's been a while since the Padres have had, like, I don't know, let's just say three innings to get their scoring right without the other team scoring.
Yeah.
It seems like in the first three innings there's been a lot of runs. I'm going back through the games that I've done recently. I'm still going.
Yeah, they yesterday, haven't had many clean first innings.
Day before, or the whole Orioles series, they did that. The opposing team got on the board within the first three.
Yeah. So anytime the Padres want to change that, it'll be okay with me. I'm just getting that out there.
For sure.
Scraby wants to ask me, so we have a minute before the break. You ask it, because I don't want to have to even say it.
Oh, are we okay? My question was because Robert Suarez gave up that home run last night.
Did he?
At least you're honest. At least you're honest. This is the only why this question's coming.
Oh yeah, it is. Do we feel okay? Let me say this, knowing that the Padres are not listening to me, or should they?
Even you know this is a ridiculous question. That's why you're having trouble asking
it. I don't think it's that ridiculous, but I think the closer. Okay, let me phrase it this way.
Are you gonna go down this road anyway? All right, go ahead.
Let me phrase it this way.
There's no stopping him now, Tony.
I'm already out of the tracks. I'll phrase it this way. Who is your number one high leverage arm in the bullpen for the Padres right now? Mine is Mason Miller.
And what does that mean in your mind?
That means that I would like to see him
pitching the ninth inning.
I think that the closer position could be fluid. Mason Miller is throwing the ball really
well.
Why
do you
right
want
now
to create things?
I don't know. I know that Robert Suarez is not going to be removed from the role as a closer, nor should he, because he gave up a home run. But
Okay, wait. Go back. I know Robert Suarez shouldn't be removed as the closer because he gave up a home run. But that's exactly what you want them to do.
See, when I present it, it's more for conversational purposes because I don't think the actual move is going to ever happen. So that's why I'm asking, like, who would you rather have bottom of the ninth or top of the ninth, whatever, closing out a playoff game, Mason Miller or Robert Suarez?
I'm going to go Suarez because he's been doing it all year and he's been doing it for me for 3 years and I'm fine with it. I can hear everybody yelling out there, but And that's fine. Go ahead and yell and send all, you know, send all of the correspondence at Chris LOSD.
You just opened yourself up.
Look. But when you send the correspondence, please attach the name of the closer in baseball who hasn't blown a save this year or a game. If you can find that person, then please attach that to your correspondence. But you know what? You can't. And if you look at Mason Miller, blew 4 or 5 saves when he was with the A's, and I would imagine that maybe they thought he should be removed at that time as well. So,
do A's fans care enough?
But my point is...
That's a good question.
Yeah, they may not care, but that's my only thing. If you want to write and say, "Hello, you know, you're dumb, we got to take Suarez out," then just include the name of the perfect closer out there who should replace him, and then I'll be happy to read it.
Okay. I mean, I already know where Tony's going, but I'm just going to make him say it.
Yeah, leave Robert where he is for now.
Okay.
It can be fluid if he blows some in the postseason. Then it can be fluid.
Okay, so the postseason does change.
Hell yeah, it changes. I mean, okay. The postseason is
postseason's
once we get to that point,
to batter. Yeah, I'm all for it.
Once you get to the postseason, I'm good with it. I don't think there's a reason to disturb things down the stretch here as we are trying to lock up whatever position that could be for the sake of, you know, what, does Mason need some games to become a closer before you do it? I don't think so. I think he's pretty well acclimated.
Last thing, Mike on the chat is on to something. He said that Mason faced the 1-2-3 hitters last night, so maybe Mason did face the heart of the lineup more so than Robert.
Don't think for one second that Mike Shields not doing that. I mean, he's coming in the 8th or the 7th. We've seen him kind of switch flip-flop depending on Suarez coming in earlier. We've seen that. So it's not really beyond Mike to do that. It just may not look like the traditional sense that we often see. That's a good point. Who brought that up?
Mike?
Yeah. Well, you know, Scrappy didn't bring it up.
That was unnecessary.
That was unnecessary.
Let's get to break.
Do I need to bring back a rise again just to get you back in the box?
Sure.
Matt Snyder, CBS Sports, joins us next. More Gwynn and Chris on the other side.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
.37 the time. Tony, he's got the TV broadcast tonight, and the game's earlier, so he's stepped out to get ready for that. He's back with us in a little while for the Big Five. Matt Snyder, CBS Sports, going to join us here in just a moment, talk some baseball. Crisello and Scraby, 97.3 The Fan, Padres Reds tonight. I want to say this, though, Scrape. I give you a pretty hard time about, you know, goofing with you on the Sanchez or Suarez-Mason Miller question. I'm going to say this. When Jason Adam was healthy before Mason Miller got here, I said many times that I felt more comfortable in the 8th inning than I did in the 9th.
You did.
Because Jason Adam was just automatic. I will agree and say that now. I feel better when Mason Miller's out there, more comfortable, more confident, you know, than when Suarez is out there.
Do you think that's because...
So maybe, with that said, because I think a lot of people feel as I do, that maybe the Padres should consider changing it. But I don't think it's a smart thing to do when for 5.5 months you've gone this way. Because
I don't disagree with that.
First, you know, Miller goes back to the 9th inning where he has not been perfect. He was not perfect with the A's. But the biggest thing is now Suarez is pitching in a completely different avenue. And I, you know, for lack of anything else, I don't want to put him in any jeopardy. He gets the job done more than most guys. And I'm going to back that up right now before we get Matt Snyder on. I'm looking right now at the list of the top 25 guys in baseball in blown saves this year. Top 25. Robert Suarez is not on the list.
No, he's only blown like 4 or 5. It just
so
seems bigger.
I know
moment.
It does. For us, it seems huge. But Tanner Scott, the former Padre, leads all of baseball. He's blown 9 saves. Jeff Hoffman of Toronto, they're having a great year, but he's blown 7. Andrés Muñoz of Seattle, who's great, has also blown 7.
Now, I'm not saying
so
that...
So you really, it's hard to find guys that haven't, you know, messed up in the ninth inning. If you pitch in the ninth inning often, you're going to lose a few.
Do you think that it would switch, like, because Mason Miller pitches the eighth, the game cannot be lost? I mean, it can, but it can't really be lost in the eighth? Are we just misplacing our anger on whoever is pitching the ninth?
No, we're just angry because we lost the game.
Okay.
And Suarez threw the pitch.
All right.
Matt Snyder, CBS Sports, joins us. Always good to have you with us, Matt. I wanted to tell you, and thank you for joining us, and welcome, as always. How are you, I should ask, before anything else?
I'm good. I'm good overall. I'm still, yesterday this time I was still trying to get over the Bears meltdown on Monday night, but I think I'm okay now.
That was bad.
Hey, Chicago fan, man, that's a tough one, Matt. We feel for you in that regard. But, you know, kind of along those lines, I have brought your name up on this show since you've been on a handful of times. And what I'm referring to is when you were on with us, I think last time, and you were talking about how the Cubs were never going to win another game. And you were like,
we're
10 games back now, the Brewers, there's no chance, the Cubs, it's all over. And where you said correctly, that just about every team in baseball has had that moment to say that this year. The Padres certainly just had their moment. They lost 9 out of 11, which, finished up with a shutout loss to Kyle Freeland. So, you know, that's about as low as they could go. But I've been bringing that up often to the listeners who get, you know, frustrated here. There's nobody in baseball this year that can really go without saying this. It's been an imperfect season for just about everybody.
Yeah, and it's normal ebbs and flows of a baseball season, because if you're going to go through that 162 times in a year, even the best teams of all time at 162 are going to lose 40-some, 50-some. You know, like, you're going to be in a bad mood a lot of the time. But interestingly, to your point, it's so much more extreme this season, because, like, the Brewers – are probably the ones who have been the exception this year. But they weren't that great until Memorial Day. And even just recently, they lost something like 6 out of 11 or something like that. Like, it's not horrible or anything, but, you know, they're on pace to win over 100 games. They're not going to go through many stretches that are that bad. But if you went around and you looked at the Blue Jays and the Tigers, the Yankees, we had to talk about if Aaron Boone should be fired so many times earlier this season. The Red Sox was broken for a little bit.
Right.
The Phillies have had some really bad stretches. The Mets completely fell apart multiple times. You already mentioned the Cubs. And meanwhile, while the Padres were losing 9 out of 11, the Dodgers were desperately trying to let the Padres hang around in the race.
Yeah. So they did let us hang around, basically.
And then you go to the American League West, and the Astros have looked broken since the 4th of July, basically.
Right.
But the Mariners wouldn't take over first when the Astros were trying to let them have first. Yeah. Meanwhile, the Rangers are now within 2.5 games because those two teams haven't played well above them. So it leads me to believe the playoffs are going to be incredibly fun and unpredictable.
With that in mind, the follow-up to that, Matt Snyder, CBS Sports, the follow-up to that is, we're sitting right now in our minds, I think I'm speaking for most Padre fans, embroiled in a battle to try to, you know, beat out the Dodgers to win this division. First, because we don't like the Dodgers, and it would be really fun to finally win the division that they win every year. But secondly, that would give the Padres, for sure, the home wild card series. Whereas it stands now, we're packing our bags and we're going to see you in Chicago.
Yeah.
At Wrigley Field. So, but I look at that, and it seems on paper, being home for the weekend to take on probably the Mets, who would be the 6th seed, sounds much more preferable than going to the Wrigley Field. It really hasn't shown that way in past playoffs. There's really, we're rooting for something that maybe it doesn't even matter what we root for.
It doesn't. Yeah, it probably doesn't matter. It's such a small sample, that 3-game series.
Right.
Little things can change the way the entire series goes. And even, like, I remember last year, like the Mets had to play that doubleheader on Monday against the Braves and then turn around and go right to Milwaukee, and they end up winning that thing in three games when it looked like they were going to lose it. And then all of a sudden they go nuts on Devin Williams in the ninth, and that was the Brewers version of Devin Williams, not the Yankees, where he was actually a great closer. So it's just – there's no method to it, man. I mean, 2023 going in, I think I said nothing would surprise me except if the Diamondbacks somehow beat the Dodgers, because there's no way that's going to happen. And then they swept them. And that was – I mean, it's just like, come on, man. You never – these short series, there's just no method to how it's going to fall. So, yeah, like my brother and my cousin and I have a text chain the other day, and they were saying, like, well, who would you rather play? And I was like, well, I'd rather play the Padres than the Dodgers, I guess. But, like, man, the Dodgers have looked so broken so many times throughout the season.
Right.
I don't know. And you just never know.
Yeah. Who would you rather play? The Nationals, but they won't be an option. So.
We're the Colorado Rockies.
Yeah, there you go.
I don't know. I don't know if the Padres want to face the Rockies. The Rockies always play them hard. We're talking to Matt Snyder, CBS Sports, here on 97.3 The Fan, Quinn and Chris. And I read your Power Rankings article every single week. I love Power Rankings. I know that some people aren't fans of Power Rankings, but this week you had the Padres in your 11th spot. I'm not going to ask you about the Padres generally, because I want to know how you go about, like, which team is the hardest for you to rank amongst the good teams? Like, how do you determine their 11 and not, like, 7 or something?
The easiest team to rank this year has been the Brewers, at least the last 6 weeks, because I can just put them at number one. The hardest, gosh, I don't think that I could give a good answer on that. I mean, it's so many of the good teams give me fits. I thought, like, I had the Yankees 3 this week, for example, and they just do not feel like the third best team in baseball. But, like, who else am I going to put there? That's just what kind of year it's been. And I feel like every fan – I was telling my dad about this on Monday before the Bears game. I was like, I feel like every fan base, me included, would look at the rankings, and if you didn't look at any teams around them, would say, oh, you have my favorite team too high. Like, I'm putting the Cubs like 5th or 6th, and I'm like, they do not feel like they're the 5th or 6th best team. They just don't feel good enough for that. But I mean, it's I might say the Yankees. I mean, the Padres have been difficult. The Dodgers have been very difficult. The Tigers have been a headache. The Yankees have been an incredible headache. Okay, basically every contender except the Brewers lately has been really hard to rank.
I figured, because I look through these rankings each week, and I'm like, how does that, like, that doesn't sound like a fun job.
I really get, and actually this week, Phillies at 2 was pretty easy as well. I mean, I knew that they didn't have the best week, but they also took 2 of 3 from the Brewers, but they were also like 4.5 games behind them, so I couldn't put them 1. But, like, I was good at Brewers 1, Phillies 2, and then after that I was like, well, what the hell is this? Who am I going to put 3rd?
Right. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. Matt Snyder's with us. All right, I'm going to open up a can of worms on this side of the phone, but I don't think you have to worry about that, Matt. I think you'll just give a straight, you know, honest shot like you always do. Luis Arraez has been the subject of a lot of conversation in San Diego, a lot of consternation from the fans. He is a 3-time-in-a-row batting champion, but he is not that this year. He's hitting, you know, 40 points below. Quote, he doesn't walk. Quote, he doesn't hit for power. They even say he has no speed, but he has actually stole 10 bases, surprisingly. He's a below-average defender. I've read all of this stuff. I've read people who say that if it wasn't for, you know, the fact that he just, you know, puts the bat on the ball, he probably isn't even a major league player. I've read that. So what should the Padres do with what should the Padres do with Luis Arraez? Should they keep batting him because he's a 3-time champ, or should they just cut their losses and say this is a bad season? How do teams generally handle something like this?
I would like him in the 9 hole. I think I would keep letting him play and hit him 9th, and it's an empty batting average, guys. So I think he's miscast, like, as a leadoff man, for example.
Right, he hits 2nd, and the fans go crazy. They don't
and
like that.
Well, that is they should, because that's, you need somebody with a lot more power in the 2-hole. An empty batting average guy like that, in this day and age, he probably needs to hit well over 300 to be a worthwhile offensive player, a quality offensive player. Like I said, I like him in the 9-hole. You put all your best players at the top of the order, for example, with, I believe Tatis is still leading off, right?
Yeah.
Tatis leading off, probably Machado. I know that it seems like Schilt likes him in the four hole or something like that, but I would love to see something like Tatis first, Machado second, and then you can hit Arise ninth. And if Arise gets hot and starts getting on base again, now you've got your table setter in front of the Thunder there. The Thunder's probably a stretch on Tatis at this point because he hasn't had near as much power for a while. But the team as a whole is lacking power.
Right.
I would rather have a lineup construction where you've got Tatis and Machado 1 and 2, and then if you have somebody like Arise, I'd like him in the 9 hole. You just the leadoff man in the second hole, those are the guys who get the most plate appearances for the entire season.
Right.
And to have somebody who is below average on base percentage getting among your most plate appearances, that is just not efficient at all. So I would rather have Arise ninth.
Okay, so here's the thing. You just made the point for all of the people who tweet me and say I don't know anything. And that's fine, because I've been trying to stand up for Arise. But here's how I've been standing up for it. Mike Schilt and the Padres, I think, are pretty smart. I think they look at the analytics. I think they look at all of the same things we all do. They still bat him second. He's batting second tonight. So why do you think they're being so, quote, stubborn if you and a lot of people, you're not alone. Believe me, the island is much more populated on that side. Think that it's time to move Arise. Why do you think they're... I'm asking you to read Mike Schilt's mind, which isn't fair, but...
Two things. 2022 through 2024, he hit .328 with .371 on base percentage.
Okay.
The bank here is he's a much better hitter than this. He's a great batsmith. He's going to get it going again. And really, a lot of the lineup has been lackluster anyway.
Right.
The other thing is the low number of strikeouts. He obviously, with only 18 strikeouts, really likes a contact guy after Tatis in that two hole before you get to the Machado types. So obviously he wants that there. And I'll add a third too.
Okay.
Sacrifice bunting. I know a lot of people don't love it. I'm on that list, but he can bunt. So my hunch is it's all those factors kind of, it's, hey, this is a guy that we think can hit .350. In short spans, we know he can put down a bunt, and he never strikes out.
Yeah, well, anyway, it's just an interesting dynamic that we enjoy going through on a pretty much a daily basis.
I don't know if I enjoy it, but...
Well, I thought I'd get an expert in on it. And,
yeah, no, it was good.
And he stuck up for everybody else out there. So,
thanks, Matt, for that, because I'm going to be referencing you each time
I talk about this. The funny thing was when he said, like, I thought we'd grab an expert on that, it sounded like he was going to say, but then instead, Matt just... said all that nonsense.
But, yeah. I know.
No, you're an expert.
Hey, man, I trust your opinion. I love your opinion, man. It's great. I hope we get you before the playoffs because, man, it's going to be a wide-open bunch of fun. And I think if nothing else, we should be happy, and I think most of us are, that the Padres are most likely going to be a part of it. So
they will be.
We'll see where it goes. Matt, thanks for the time, as always. Continued great work.
All right, take care.
Yes, thanks, sir. Matt.
Matt Snyder from CBSSports.com. He made everyone else's point better than they made their own points.
Isn't that funny? It's not that he's right or wrong, because nobody's really right or wrong. The only people that can be right or wrong are the guys who are making the decisions.
Well, that's why I bring that. That's why I keep going back to that. You know, if everybody's so right, then why are we not listening and doing it? Because Arise bats second, and that's where he is today, and that's where he always is.
I've said this
for... So it's just weird to me.
A little bit now. I don't think being low in the order is a sign of disrespect. I actually like having guys that can hit in the eighth spot, like Jake Cronenworth, or putting Arise in the ninth spot, because you need someone to turn over the lineup, and maybe that would take a little bit of pressure. I don't know. I feel like they won't move him because it seems like it's disrespectful to move him.
No, I think they're not moving him for why Matt Snyder said, which is what they're hoping that
he
at some point the hitting champion is going
to,
you know, resurface. But it certainly hasn't happened yet. All right, very good. We do have some good news.
What's that?
I got a little good news. Since, you know, the Giants are getting a little uncomfortably closer in the standings, be nice if they would lose today, and they are. 5-0 to the Diamondbacks in the bottom of the 7th.
Very nice.
So we'll keep an eye on that. Dodgers, again, with the Rocks. Told you the Rocks.
I didn't even see what happened last night.
They got no hit again until the seventh inning. The Rockies cannot get a hit in Los Angeles.
Dodgers can't no hit.
No, they didn't finish off the no-hitter, but they still beat them again. So it's a two-game spread in the West. More Gwen and Chris. Daily Gambit stuff around the corner.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Will Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.